Understanding your true nature has real implications for an inner harmonious world. And that is what this week's podcast is all about.
This is the Thrive Podcast, the podcast that gives you the opportunity to, well, thrive. Today on the Thrive Podcast for athletes and professional sports people, we've got another great guest. You know, this is the podcast where we have world leaders in their respective fields, and this guy's no different. Author, coach, and of course exponent of the three principles. And if you're not aware what the three principles are, you will soon, of course. And he has a fascinating strapline, exploring true nature and its implications for a more harmonious world. What could be better than that for our audience, the professional athlete, tennis players, etc.? Welcome to Garrett Kramer. Garrett, welcome.
Thank you, guys. It's terrific to be here and meet you. Look forward to the discussion.
Well, we are absolutely thrilled to have you, I can tell you. I think the first thing we wanted to ask you, really, just in its bare bones, why do you think athletes suffer from stress, anxiety, mental health issues?
Well, I don't think, Keith, that they suffer any more than anyone else. I don't think that being an athlete is makes one more prone or less prone to any of that. I think it's an essential misunderstanding that the human race is dealing with, and if we get that starting point or that foundation wrong, if we misunderstand, so to speak, then suffering will be a natural component. So I think the human race, quite frankly, is caught up or has the starting point of who we are and how we perceive the world backward. And as a result of that, we're at each other's throats and our own throat for that matter. Hopefully that's what we'll talk about, or part of what we'll talk about today.
Sure. And on that, you know, I've worked with many athletes, and I really feel that from coaches, from parents, from their environment, they're taught from an early age that they need to hustle, they need to work hard, they need to use a lot of willpower, they need to be super disciplined. I'd be super curious how you think about those terms, or no pain, no gain.
I think that those terms are just endemic of the misunderstanding. From the minute we're born, Alan, we are really programmed to see ourselves as individuals, separate entities. Now, obviously, when a baby is born, he or she has no concept that he or she is a separate entity. He or she is taught that, given a name, given a nationality, a religion, so on, and sport, a number on the back of your jersey. And from that place comes isolation and insecurity and confusion, because I would argue that that is the fundamental misconception. We are not a separate entity. And however, so in other words, we're taught to be a speck in the universe as opposed to the universe itself. So from the perspective of a limited and lacking speck, temporary speck in the universe, I mean, imagine teaching a child that that's who you are. You are one speck among a gazillion other specks. Now go fend for yourself among all these specks. That is an incredibly debilitating misunderstanding. And from there, confusion, suffering, coping, more confusion, more suffering, more coping. So those athletes that you mentioned are taught that by coaches and teachers who are suffering themselves from the same misunderstanding, and they're just compounding it in their charges, in their players, in their students. Parents do it, teachers do it, coaches do it. So when I was in the throes of that misunderstanding in my late 20s, by the grace of God, I kind of realized that something was really backward about this, because I'm trying to do all this stuff and I'm worse. So I would kind of feel better temporarily, which I'll explain why that wouldn't be in a second, but it had no staying power, and that led me on a journey to really try to dive in and figure this all out. It just so happens that, like you guys, I was an athlete and I was then a coach. So sport became the vehicle through which I experimented on what I came to understand. As I got older, I'm 60 now. I still work with athletes and teams, but my work has broadened. I know that's a lot, and feel free to ask me any questions about that. I'm happy to answer.
I'd love to ask a follow-up question on that. So naturally, like, an athlete, he wants to win, right? Like, by definition, in a competition, like, that's one of the things they enjoy. And at the same time...
Well, I don't know if they enjoy it, sorry, but they certainly want to. I don't know if enjoy is the right description, but I would say that it's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting to win. I mean, that makes sense. But yeah, I don't know if they enjoy it.
They think they'll be happy if they win. And my question is, how do you combine being ambitious, wanting to be as good as you can be, with understanding that we are not necessarily like all separate individual entities?
The way I would describe that is every person at some tipping point, this is very obvious in sport. It's also obvious in arts. Every person at some tipping point does what I'm about to say. I'm going to go really slow because I think this is so essential to your question and to our understanding. They stop expressing themselves. We're going to stick to sport right now. They stop expressing themselves through the game. They stop expressing the love, peace, passion, and purpose and joy they truly are through the game. And they start seeking themselves in the game. So let me say that again. They stop expressing who they are, peace, love, happiness, passion, freedom, through the game. Just look at a young child playing sport. You see that. And at some point, because of what we are told, what we are conditioned to believe about the sport, about life, about who we are, we then start seeking our identity in the game. To a certain degree, every human being on the planet right now is suffering from that infliction, including us. And my role is to help dial that back. So I want players to express themselves through whatever they're doing. I want you to express yourself not only on the field or on the court or on the course, on the ice, whatever. I want you to express yourself in your marriage and with your friendships to the stranger you pass on the street. And it's the degree we can stop seeking our identity in these activities is the degree we will return back to who we truly are, peace, love, and happiness. And again, all you have to do is look at a young child on the tennis court, just in the game, just expressing the joy and passion they truly are in that endeavor. Now, I'm not suggesting we should dial it back to childhood, because that's impossible. What I'm speaking about is erasing the misunderstanding, the lies, the beliefs, as in our journey back home to who we truly are.
So let me get this straight. Let me see if I've understood this, Garrett. If we see ourselves in that way, just coming back to what you said earlier about being part of the universe as opposed to having it being a separate part, then surely that takes away that individual need to compete and to win.
Well, okay, sorry. Is there more? Is there more?
No, I'm asking you the question. So, because we're trying to scale it back to understand why winning is so important and creates pressure, tension, anxiety, depression when you don't.
But winning doesn't do that. Winning can't do any of that. The desire to win cannot create any of those things.
So what's the point?
What's the point of
trying to win?
Oh, I don't know, but there is what's the point in as far as the purpose of life? There's no point. There's no point. The desire to win is conditioned. We're trained to think that that's important. Now, I'm not saying that that's bad or good. Like I work with players. I want them to win. But I darn well know that my identity, my well-being, my worth, who I truly am, is not impacted, cannot be dented or harmed if they win or if they don't win. Who I am could give a shit. I mean, it has no bearing who I truly am. So it's not necessarily that we're trying to do away with this conditioned desire to win. The question is, can winning or losing change who we truly are at our core? That's the question. And the answer to that question, I'm suggesting, is no. And I'm not saying anyone should believe what I'm saying. My role is not to tell people how it is, but to share an exploration into these matters, just like we're doing today, with the people that are interested. And then you have to make up your own mind and see if it jives for you. But winning, Keith, is an object that we're conditioned to seek. Well, that's just what it is. Just like a relationship with a woman or a man is what we're conditioned to seek. Just like money is something we're conditioned to seek. Just like security or fame is what we're conditioned to seek. We're not here to change those elements of conditioning. We're here to point out to people that answers, peace, love, and happiness aren't found there. And you're going to suffer to the degree you're seeking those things. Or
at the same time,
connecting your identity to those things.
And at the same time, when we're connected to our essence of who we are, we actually can perform much better, right? Because
I'd be careful with that, but in all honesty, like, I think the mistake is a couple of things, Alan. First of all, we can never be connected to who we are. We are always who we are. So it's not like it's separate from us. So there's no connection to who we are. We are it. So we can't connect to it. Mm-hmm. That would imply that we at times are not it. That's like saying Superman, when he's dressed as Clark Kent, is not Superman anymore. He's still Superman. He's just bailed as Clark Kent. He never is not Superman. So we have to be careful. He can't get back to being Superman. He could wear this costume and overlook the fact that he's Superman. And he could suffer and he could seek Lois Lane and approval and all that stuff. But ultimately, it just takes someone like you to hit him on the shoulder and say, dude, you're Superman. What are you doing? Come on. And then right. Thank you. Thanks for that. And then he's back. But he was always Superman. But sometimes we overlook that very point. So Now, that said, none of this is offered, at least by me, as a recipe to perform better. That would be the fatal flaw of what we're talking about. That's like using God for personal benefit, or using source or truth for personal benefit. So I have a funny thing that I say to every single person or team that calls me up that wants to get to know what I do or hire me or something, and I've done this for nearly 30 years. I say, if you're looking to win Wimbledon or the Masters or, you know, whatever title or whatever in sport, go hire somebody else. because I can't help you with that. If you're looking to understand who you truly are, I think I can. We can share that exploration. Now, ultimately, that kind of jolts people, because in truth, every single person is in search of who they truly are. That's the only thing we are actually in search of. So trying to win Wimbledon, trying to be famous, trying to find a spouse, all of those materialistic endeavors are the desire to know who we truly are in disguise. There's only one actual desire, and that is the fundamental question of who am I? So I want to go right to that. I don't want to get, you know, stuck in all these other stuff. Let's just go right to that. Who are you?
So is it about identity? If you can teach an athlete, anybody, but of course this is directed towards professional sports people, about their identity, not being what they do, which is to wield a tennis racket, use a golf club, a boxing glove, or whatever, then they can find the way to wellness.
Yeah, that's very well put. I would take it one step further, and I would say their identity isn't only what you described it, Keith, but also your identity isn't Keith. I'm not talking about, like, sometimes you'll help players say, well, this tournament can't define me because I'm a husband and I'm a family man, and no matter what, my wife and kids are going to love me. And that's more of the same misunderstanding. It's nice to have a wife and kids that love you. I have that. I'm very lucky. I'm not thinking that's a bad thing. But that's more of the same misunderstanding. I'm not an athlete. I'm a husband and father. Well, they're both fine, but they're just labels. They're not. It's not who you truly are. That's what you've learned to be. Just like you could say, I'm an American, or I'm this religion or that religion. I want to. Is that true? So if you ask, I would say to someone, well, is that true? What do you mean? Is it true? Well, did you learn that? Because if you've learned it, it's not true. But I want to keep stripping away these conditioned beliefs, these conditioned labels, until we can't strip away anymore. And we're not going to do that today, but I would contend that if you do that, that process of self-exploration, once it's all out of there, so to speak, what you arrive at is, I am infinite and I am eternal. I am unharmable. I am consciousness is the word I would use. There are other words you could use too, but we'll stick with that one. So you keep stripping away, what do you know for certain? I am a man. Well, I was taught that this is a man. I'm an American. I was taught that. All these things are just labels. What is not a label? And I will bet you'll get to the fact that I am, which is actually the Christian name for God, but that's the same thing, consciousness. So you get to I am, and you won't be able to put anything on the back end of it. I am. I am here. I am now. I am consciousness. And once you're there, you're untouchable. Now, from there, And I'm using his name not as not in a religious way. Jesus said, be in the world, but not of the world. What he meant was, at least what I would say he meant was, know yourself as that infinite, eternal being you truly are. And now jump in to the game. Jump into the world from that perspective. Now you are free. So often people will say, well, Gary, okay, I'm consciousness. Give me the practical application of that. Let's say that all the time. And the fact is, if you are approaching life from the perspective of a limited and lacking body, there's nothing practical about that. That is the most impractical. And you can give me a strategy, a tool, read a book, a mantra. It's not practical at all because it's not true. But if you jump into the game of life, the game of tennis, the game of golf, hockey, football, whatever, if you jump into the game from the perspective of I am infinite, I am eternal, I am free, now that is practical. And you'll see those who have a glimpse of who they are, you'll see them doing some extraordinary things in that world, in that game. They'll be breaking molds. Teaching new paradigms, and they'll be often be castigated and condemned and ridiculed and censored because they're so free. They're just having that truth until the rest of the world kind of catches up. So that's the, you know, that's the Martin Luther Kings of the world. The Mandela's, the Jesus, obviously. So again, we're not talking about, we're really taking this to the place of, what do I know for certain? Keep going, keep going, keep going until you can't go anymore and you will have found yourself. I'll even take it, and this is going to sound crazy, guys. I'll even ask people, not only can you die, they have no experience of dying, so how do they know? I'll even take it, were you born? And if someone can point to the experience of them being born, that'd be the first. Now you can say, well, my children were born. I saw my children born. Well, yeah. But I have no experience of being born. I've always been here. So you can really take this to a wild ride. And that's what this new book I have coming out Christmas time hopefully will do. Much, much deeper than my two previous books.
Can't wait to read your new book. Just referring back to something you said in your old books, you say that we live in the feeling of our thinking. Can you explain that? And also, can you explain how that relates to well-being for athletes?
Well, I don't know that I would say it like that anymore, but it's not necessarily wrong. My last book was published in 2015. I wrote it, I think, over 10 years ago. But what that's really pointing to, Alan, is that it will look like to us that feelings arise because of a so-called external event. So it will look to us that the weather or what someone says to us or let's say one of our children is sick or COVID or something, like these so-called external events are causing our feelings, the feelings that arise. So my suggestion is I try to spin that around any way I can to indicate that, no, that's not why feelings arise. Feelings are an internal mechanism that rise and fall independently of those things. So back then, I linked it to thought, which I would not do anymore. But it's not, again, it's not necessarily wrong, but just the most important element of that was, no, it's not what happens out there that drives the feelings the emotions, the sensations that arise and dissolve. They are simply coming and going indiscriminately. And if we make the mistake of attaching our so-called state of mind or our feelings, our mood, whatever, to those events, then we're going to have to change those events in order to feel better, which again is a fatal flaw because it has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. I was speaking to one of my sons today, and he's kind of having this thing with this woman, and he wants to get at an age where he's thinking about getting married and all this stuff. And I actually, at some point in the conversation, I said, hey, you know, that out there, whether you're with a wife, a woman or not, you get married or not, that's not going to impact happiness. And if you think it is, I feel sorry for that woman because she's going to have to carry a burden that she's not going to ever fulfill. It's impossible. So if I and his mother and I have been married for over 31 years, and if I fall for the lie that Liz, my wife's name, if Liz has the, it drives my happiness, oh my gosh, I'm going to look to her for something she could never fulfill, never. And that's a disaster. That's the problem with most marriages. We're looking to our spouse for something that they have no impact on. Happiness, feelings arise and dissolve randomly within us. Now, we can be conditioned, trained again to think, okay, if it's a nice sunny day, I'm in a good mood. But again, it's just conditioning. It's just training. That the weather has no impact on our mood. Of course, now we got doctors who say it does, but it's crazy. Then you got some people who love rainy days. I don't know, which one is it? So it's the understanding that our inner sensations arise and dissolve indiscriminately and independent from the exterior that really is essential for well-being.
Okay. Go ahead, Ellen.
Sorry. You also mentioned that we have this inbuilt psychological immune system. Can you, if this still reflects your thinking today?
It's all the same. I just as anything else, our language of kind of changes, you know, so which is fine. That's totally fine. What I mean by that is, you know, our grandmothers told us to, if we were upset, get a good night's sleep. You look at it differently in the morning, which is just brilliant, brilliant advice. Because the situation, we wake up in the morning after a good night's sleep and the situation hasn't changed. But what's changed is our perspective on the situation. So I'm suggesting that if we don't try to fix these internal sensations, feelings, emotions, if we don't cope, they will naturally dissolve on their own. That's the self-correcting mechanism I'm talking about. And we have such, everyone can point to areas of their life where that is true. Everyone knows that has happened to them. Everyone. In other words, maybe I'm having a bad day here in the office, but then, I don't know, something happens where I get distracted and then I come back to the thing that was bothering me and all of a sudden it's not bothering me anymore, even though the thing hasn't changed. So why would we try to fix either the thing or our feelings when that's going to work itself through naturally on its own? We magnify problems, whether it's the circumstantial issue or the so-called internal issue, by trying to fix it, by trying to manage that which is ultimately unmanageable. Look at a small child having a temper tantrum and you'll see what I'm talking about. They could go berserk on a temper tantrum, and then if you just leave them be, it's gone and it's totally forgotten within seconds.
So let me ask you this then, Garrett, because this is geared towards competitive sports people. You're on a tennis court, a football pitch, a soccer pitch, whatever you want to call it, an athletics track, and you're hit by a rush of anxiety. What is your advice? Because at the end of the day, perhaps they haven't got time to wait around and, oh, I feel differently now.
Yeah. So my advice, if I was in their head, and like, you know, they could listen, they could hear me. My advice would be to keep running, keep swinging, keep the legs moving, stay in the game. I write about that in that book. So that's my advice. I would also, if I had more time, I would remind this player that, or let's say I would ask this player, have you ever been in a wonderful so-called mental state and played poorly? 100% of the time, they're going to say yes. Have you ever been in a wonderful mental state and performed well? Yes. Okay, so now you've been in a great place mentally, so to speak, and outcomes vary. Definitely. Have you ever been in a lousy place psychologically, anxious, as you said, let's say, and performed lousy? Yes. Have you ever been in an anxious state and performed well? Yes. What are we doing? We're searching for something that's irrelevant. How many players have you guys know, maybe even yourselves, that have been crazy anxious and succeed, so to speak? Happens all the time. So why are we trying to fix something that actually isn't the basis of excellence? Not.
I'm going to give you an example, Garrett. There's a certain player in the tennis world who a few years ago had 3 championship points in the final, of course. Now, nobody knows what was going on in his mind, but it may be possible that his thinking, as you would probably say, but he had some sort of anxious thoughts of what was upon him. He tightened up, couldn't get the job done.
Yeah, but again, tightening up, anxious thoughts, my role, this wouldn't be the primary role, but one of my roles would be to show him that we're not here to try to fix that. We're here to understand that they will come and go, but either way, they cannot impact your potential on the court. They cannot. I don't care what anyone says. It cannot happen. You are still the same tennis player. You are still, your potential is the same, whether anxious thoughts are arising or you're in the greatest place ever. That would be my role. I get there by dialing back the misunderstandings. One of them is you have to be in this certain mental state to excel. That is a myth propagated by the self-help world. That's how it just is. And it's the degree that a person thinks that they have to be in this certain place will determine whether they paralysis by analysis that you're describing. Now, ultimately that player is under the misunderstanding that outcome will somehow impact who they truly are. That wouldn't be happening if that wasn't the case. So my role is not, I wrote this in one of those books, I can't remember which one. Quick story I wrote about was, I gave a talk at a university, and after the talk was over, there was a line of people to ask individual questions. And one of those people was an American sports psychologist who really disagreed with my work. Not uncommon. And he asked me, okay, this is all well and good, but here's my question. If you were the mental coach of an American football team and the score is tied, with no time left on the clock, and the field goal kicker has a kick to win the Super Bowl, wouldn't it be your job to help him make that kick? And his question really froze everyone, like all the people that were around after the talk. And everyone was like, hush, what's the answer to this? Because I think he's got him on this one. And I didn't look at it that way. I simply said, no, that wouldn't be my role. My role is simply to help him understand that whether he makes the kick or whether he misses the kick, who he is at his core cannot be affected. That's my role. And I would contend, if you want to come down a level to this level of that example, that the player who understands that will tend not to freeze up in those situations. I mean, if you think your life is on the line by winning the match, how would you be able to pull the trigger? Like, it makes sense that he would blow those three match points, or the field goal kicker would freeze up and you know, miss the shot or whatever, miss the field goal or whatever. But so it all comes down to that ultimately. And my role is to show people that, no, this external object we're seeking, a title of some kind, a championship, cannot impact who we truly are.
So on that, of course, there's a lot of coaches, psychologists, other people in the world of sports who give athletes specific tools like visualization, affirmation, breathing techniques. Why do these techniques actually, in your opinion, backfire? Can you explain to us what actually happened?
Sure. There's two aspects to this, so don't let me just answer the first part. Remind me of what else I could easily forget. So the reason they backfire, or they appear to backfire, is because, or let's say it this way, the reason they kind of appear to work and then backfire, does that make sense? Does that, you guys relate to that? That they kind of appear to have something and then they ultimately lose their steam? That makes
like
sense.
Like a curve.
Yeah,
it looks like up and then
all of a sudden it's not working anymore. So give me the next one because this one's not working anymore. That's my experience with players all the time. So the reason that happens is because that's not what was working, so to speak, in the first place. So what was working in the first place? Well, what happens is, the player meets with this expert. The expert gives him this strategy, this tool, this technique. The player thinks they now have the answer. They've got the trick. So because they now have the trick, they temporarily stop seeking. But it's not the trick that brings them peace of mind, brings them ease, helps them move better, whatever. It's the fact that they stop seeking. So we return back to who we truly are, not because of the trick, when we stop seeking in the world of objects. So we temporarily stop seeking, and this happens to us on a daily basis. We just stop seeking. I'm cool. But then we get ramped up again and we start seeking again. So we go to the next trick thinking that the technique or the tool was the thing that made us feel good, but it wasn't. It was that we stopped seeking. So that's what happens. So again, it's never the thing we do that brings us peace, happiness, fluidity, calm. It's always the fact that we stopped seeking. Nobody knows that. They think it's the strategy. Strategy's irrelevant. If someone stops seeking, they're going to return back to who they truly are, and they're going to be passionate and loving, and they're going to have energy. That's what we're after. That's where they return home.
So that brings me on to probably
the second aspect. Sorry.
Okay, so the second, this is important, it's tied in with the first. So provided that's understood, I it could sound like I am against strategies in what I, even what I just said. I want to be clear, I'm not against anything, but I don't mind strategies. What I mind in the realm of this conversation is strategies that keeps a seeker seeking in the objects of the material world. So if you're giving me a strategy for the purpose of playing better tennis, that is a problem. You are going to ramp up suffering. If you're giving me a strategy that can help spin me back towards self, capital S, back home, there's great utility in that. So the art of coaching is actually art of spinning seekers back inward, back home. If you keep the seeker seeking in the world of objects, which are just illusions, you are actually propagating suffering. So strategies aren't the problem. I have a million so-called strategies. Like I could, the ultimate one being, Alan, who the fuck are you? What are we doing? Who are you? Oh, wait. Yeah, I'm Superman. I'm not Clark Kent. Okay, let's go now. Now let's go. From the perspective of Superman, now go play the game. So I can have my strategies, but I can mess up too, by the way. I mess up all the time. But when I'm on my game, I'm spinning those I love, including the players I work with, back inward to who they truly are. And I'll do that any way I can.
So that kind of brings me on to one of the final questions, really, because I know we're taking up a lot of your time, which we're very grateful for. So you talked about the fact that once we strip down, metaphorically speaking, we go back inwards to our true being, we can perform at a better level. I just want to ask you, how? Take me or Alon, how do you strip us down to what you said before, I am? I want you to give us some ideas of how we could do it. How our audience, the professional athlete, tennis players, boxers, footballers, whoever, how would you advise them to strip down to that being?
I think I touched on it, but clearly not enough. I think the first thing, I didn't touch on this actually, but it just occurs to me that the first thing I would say is to recognize that insecurity, and insecurity is simply a blanket word for any overt sensation, any sensation that kind of really knocks us on our ass. The anxiety you described that tennis player had, that's insecurity. So anytime insecurity arises, I would ask people that instead of trying to fix that, which is what we're all have been trained to do, right? I mean, think about it. When we were little, we were told that confidence is king and insecurity sucks. Like, I would say it's backwards, but that's okay. So insecurity or any overt sensation such as that arises is really a calling that we are connecting our identity or who we are to who we are not. So we're connecting who we are to the world of objects, to fame, fortune, whatever. So insecurity is kind of your warning system that you're off kilter. That, and it's a blessing. Insecurity is a blessing. I think it was Alan Watts who wrote a book called The Wisdom of Insecurity for this very purpose. Insecurity arises when we are off base, when we're not seeing clearly, when we're overlooking that we're fucking Superman, not Clark Kent. That's insecurity. So stop trying to shoo that away. Because the more you try to, the more you resist that which is trying to help you, the more suffering is going to ramp up. That's one thing. So once recognize that insecurity is simply a message, an intuitive message we then can get to a place where, okay, wow, I was really trained to try to fix that. What else did this world train me to do that is, that I've gotten backward? And that's that, what do I know for certain question we discussed earlier? I would really look at your life and really look at, have the courage, so to speak, to really look at these things. All the way down to, was I born? I know that sounds crazy to people. I don't care if it does. Good. Look at it. Tell me if you were born. Have you had the experience? I don't care what people tell you. Have you had the experience? Because if you haven't had the experience, then it's conditioning. It's conditioning. It's not truth. Look at it. Drill it down. Drill it down. Find a community, friends, lovers, whatever, who are willing to share this journey with you. When people come to see me, I often suggest that their spouse comes to see me also. Or sometimes athletes, as you guys know, professional athletes are very young. So maybe your parents want to come also, your agent. Get them here, because I want this to be a shared journey. And I want those closer to understand, because first of all, what we're going to be talking about is going to seem batshit crazy at first. So let's really, I want everyone, because man, was I born? That's, of course I was born. How am I here if I wasn't born? Well, okay. I can disprove that in 2 seconds, but hey. So I would ask someone to drill down, drill down, drill down until you get to what you said, I am. I am, and you can't put anything on the back end of it. I mean, Jesus put, I am the way, the truth, and the life on the back end of it. That's about as, that means I am everything. All things are made of me. All things are made of me. This world isn't appearing out there. This world is appearing in here. Nothing appears at a distance from me. Everything appears within me and is thus made of me. Now you tell the athlete who thinks a bad thought is a problem, once they realize that sensation, that thought is actually made of consciousness themselves, they would have no reason to shoo it away. It's like saying, I am the sea. I really like this placid whirlpool over here, but this violent one, that's a problem. I'm going to try to shoo this one away. Now, where's it going to go? Can't go outside the sea. And what is it made of in the first place? It's made of the sea. So the sea is going to try to get this violent thought, this whirlpool out. It can't go anywhere. And it doesn't need to, because it's made of the sea. It's all the sea. So why am I saying this is a good whirlpool over here? This is a bad whirlpool. I'm going to get this one out. First of all, there's nowhere for it to go. And second of all, it's all water. What are we doing? What are we doing? It's a cycle of misunderstanding where the sea is trying to rid itself of itself. Yes, thus more whirlpools. So I ask people, I use that metaphor often. You are the sea. All things that arise don't arise at a distance from you. They arise within you, and they're made of you, and they're known by you. Stop trying to shoo this stuff out, because it can't get it go anywhere. Where is it going to go? It can't. Now, once we really get to this, and you've had moments in these conversations where you've seen it and you've lost it, it's good. That's good. It happens to me too. We start to hold on to it a little bit longer. And it has to be, athletes especially, performers, are really asked to suspend their own experience. They're asked to believe what the expert says. Trust, and I would dissuade that. No, you trust your own experience and make sure it's logic. So now what I just said, although it's unusual, it's still logic that whatever arises within the sea is made of the sea, right? That's logic, yes? It's also logic that if it arises within the sea, it can't jump outside of the sea, right? So if I'm using that as a metaphor for self, what I'm saying is all things arise within you and they are made of you and they can't be thrown out of you. So why are you trying to get rid of anxiety, which is just made of the sea or you? Consciousness. It's not there to hurt you. It's there to guide you, to help you. Sadly, that tennis player you mentioned, somewhere in his training, he's been taught that this anxiety is a problem. If he wasn't taught that, it wouldn't affect him. He's been taught that's a problem. Just like a little child is taught that the temper tantrum is a problem. You have to learn that it's not a problem. The violent whirlpool is not a problem. It's only a problem because the child is taught, you can't act that way, that's no good. So the child then tries to not act that way, and what happens? It perpetuates itself. As opposed to the whirlpools arising naturally, dissolving naturally, and they wouldn't bother anybody. That's the self-correcting mechanism that you spoke of earlier, Alan. So it all ties together. But all I want people, and you know, as we said earlier, like we're sport people, fine. So this is our view. This is who we speak to. I just want players, athletes, coaches to see that they are not, that they're whole. That in spite of these experiences or these sensations that arise and dissolve, they're always whole, and they can't be less than whole. So stop trying to fix what isn't broken in the first place. And once players see that, they can truly settle in and go back to expressing who they truly are through the game.
Beautiful. In my experience, what I often see is that we have a young athlete, and when they're young, they're often very, they're not as self-conscious. They play from inspiration, and they suddenly have this big win, this big success. And then expectations kick in, and suddenly they start struggling. Suddenly they feel pressure. Suddenly they fall into a slump, and then they struggle with well-being. And I know it really ties into what you said before, but if you had a client coming to you after such a slump, is that what you would really work on? Like letting them understand that they're whole, regardless of how they see themselves?
The slump is this, the degree. A slump occurs to the extent that we're connecting our identity to the material world. So the role, my role would always be to turn that player back inward, back to source. So you know the story of the prodigal son? So the prodigal son, it's a biblical story. I'm just going to tell it very simply. The prodigal son is the story of Jesus, but be that as it may, he went searching. He left God. He left home because he had been convinced by the world that happiness and his well-being were found in that world of objects. So we went searching in that world. He went searching in substances, in relationships, in possessions, in behaviors. He went searching in that world for himself, peace, love, and happiness, other words for the self. And the brilliance of the father in this story is he didn't stop him from doing it because he knew that it was going to happen anyway. Once we're out there seeking, I mean, you can't change someone's mind like that. They have to go through that process. But ultimately, that world will disappoint them. Ultimately, it will disappoint everyone because peace, love, and happiness are right here. There's no step from you to you. So if you're stepping into this illusion, you're going to suffer. because you already are it, but you're searching for it. But you forget that. So the prodigal son goes to search, and finally he realized, whoa, wait a second. It's not there. I'm seeking in this relationship. I'm seeking in this money. I'm seeking in wealth. I'm seeking in titles. I'm seeking in this behavior of climbing Mount Everest, whatever. Shit, it's not there. I'm not finding it there. So you kind of give up. And in the give up is this pivot back home. And this is the stripping away I'm talking about. You start to make your way back to source. Back home, back home, back home. All things ultimately will dissolve back into source. So if you're seeking, you know you're not in that Superman mode, because all things find you. That's the insecurity arises when that happens. So ultimately, the prodigal son just pivoted, turned around, he came back home, and all good. But we can't really, as much as we want to save people, ultimately, all we could do is stand as consciousness, as source, and allow people to come back to us. You know, the ball on the football field always finds the great scorer. The scorer doesn't go seeking the ball. Same on ice hockey. You know, my father, I was ice hockey, but my father used to tell me now, don't go crashing into the pile. Just let the puck find you. That was great advice. He didn't know what he was saying, but it was brilliant advice. He did know what he was saying, I should say. Brilliant. And my daughter was a field hockey player, and she was a scorer who just sat there and filed her nails and waited for the ball to come. Everybody was jealous, said she didn't work hard. But meanwhile, she was breaking all the scoring records. She didn't chase the ball. She knew to let the ball find her. We can't stop the seeker from seeking. That seeker ultimately is going to find out for him or herself. We can stand there like the father did, and as that bastion of consciousness, not give in, and ultimately they're going to pivot around. You know, when my father died, very interesting, he was somewhat of a seeker. Terrific athlete, terrific coach, by the way, but still somewhat of a seeker. And when he was dying, I could see that seeking was finally, he was pivoting back home. I could see it. It was almost like the pressure was off. And it was very obvious to me that it wasn't death that did that, because it can happen anytime, but perhaps death triggered that. All right, well, whatever. I mean, I'm going to die, so I'll just stop seeking. What's it for at this point? And the minute he stopped seeking, I saw him differently. And to this day, I see him differently, which is very interesting. Like, we had our issues when he was alive, and I can't remember what they were. I can't. But I can remember the love. It's wild. I can't remember the issues. Now, sometimes my wife will remind me of the issues, and I almost say, don't talk about that, because I don't want to. I'm not going there. Like, I don't even, like, it doesn't compute. And with his body not here, love is shining through. The body, I am the body. That misunderstanding we talked about, I am the body, that veils who we are. I am Clark Kent, veils source, veils who we truly are. So from that perspective, we're going to seek, and he did it. And I do it to a certain extent. You guys do too. None of us are perfect by any means. Very important that those we work with understand that. We're in it with them. We're not better than them. We're not up here and they're down here. Not even close. Sometimes the opposite. Because sometimes the players I work with, at least, are younger than me. A lot younger than me at this stage of the game. And they have less conditioning than me. So they're closer to it than me. Which is wonderful. So anyway, yeah, the misunderstanding that I am this and I am that, that veils the very thing we're seeking. So if we seek identity or validation in the material world, as the prodigal son was doing, the suffering is going to ramp up. So we want to spin back around to the extent that it makes sense. And it won't, those things lose meaning. And I always say that I have a quote in this book I wrote that says something like, there's no such thing as success. It's just the ego's, one of the ego's, this isn't perfect, one of the ego's ways to distract us away from source, who we truly are. Find it out there. Win that tournament. Make that money. Good luck. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. It's not there. That's not what you're truly seeking. You're seeking to not seek. You're seeking to no longer seek. So don't look for it out there.
It's fascinating that you've given us the wisdom, and of course our audience. I want to ask you two more very quick things. One, where can we learn more about your work? Where can our audience learn more about your work, number one? And number two, if you were to sum up in a sentence or two sentences how your paradigm can help a professional and competitive athlete, what would it be?
Well, it's not my paradigm, but I know what you mean. Because, like I said, the only thing that anybody who's watching this is actually after, the only desire, only one desire, and that is to know who you truly are or return home. Say it anyway. That's the whole journey of life. So that's how, I hope. When I don't mess it up. As far as the first question, unfortunately, I don't know if you guys know this, but because of my take on the, we're not going to talk about this now, because of my overtake on the pandemic, I was censored by like my website is a shell of what it used to be. Because YouTube, I had thousands of YouTube videos. From all my talks over the years, there were just Q&As, and YouTube censored me, so you can't. And that was pretty much my website. So yeah. But you can still contact. So that's it's a little harder to get a hold of me these days. But you can contact me through my website, which is just garrettkramer.com, and then you can email me through there, and I will always respond to anyone who emails me. Always. So. I will never not respond to someone who emails me. So if anyone wants to reach out and ask me a question, I'm happy to answer.
Well, you were very kind, Garrett. You responded to our email, and here we are today. And I speak for myself and Alon, I'm sure, in thanking you very much for giving us your time, because certainly I've learned something, and I've got no doubt our audience would have done the same. And I'm sure that Alon concurs. Isn't that right, Alon?
Thank you so much. This was really awesome.
Do head over to the Thrive website. That's www.thrive, spelt THR, the digit 1, VE.space, where you can sign up for further giveaways and, of course, tips. That's www.thrive, spelt THR, 1ve.space. After all, this is your space to thrive.